Turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 25. This Friday we'll start up RU once again. For those involved in that program, they had a meeting last Friday, and we're excited to see that get back and swing of things. And those who are involved, we hope to see you back for that. This is the last of our series on the Olivet Discourse, chapters 24 and 25 of Matthew. There are key chapters throughout the Bible, and particularly in the Gospel of Matthew, there are key chapters that really come together of a discourse. Matthew 13 talks about the parables of the kingdom and what's going to happen, and then go back to chapters 5, 6, and 7, we have the Sermon on the Mount. But here we have what's called the Olivet Discourse, and it's prophetic. It references things to come. It talks about some of the prophecy that they knew and some of the things that were a mystery that they did not understand. Just keep in mind, this book was probably written just a few years after the crucifixion of Christ, maybe 37 to 39 A.D. And the book of Revelation is not written until about 95 A.D. So they didn't have the benefit of that, nor 1 Corinthians about the rapture of the church was not yet written. What they are seeing now is in the viewpoint or the mind of a Jew. And they're thinking kingdom. They're thinking Jesus setting up a kingdom on this earth. The two chapters are divided into really three sections. So through in chapter 24, verses 1 through 44, it is primarily Jewish. Remember, there were three questions that were asked. And Jesus had walked by the temple, and he said the temple is going to be destroyed. And they said, "Tell us, when shall these things be? What shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?" Those three questions were answered, one of them in Luke, and the other two were answered here in Matthew 24 and 25. Matthew 24, 1 through 44 deals primarily with the Jews. For the benefit of the Jews, he now deals with what we call the church age or Christendom. Verse 45, starting with who then, chapter 24, verse 45, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? He talks about the ruler and he comes back, and in all three of these, he comes back suddenly, and it is a reminder of Christendom. He's gone. He's not on this earth. He's not ruling this earth. He's at the right hand of the Father, but this church age has been going on 2,000 years. In Christendom, as Matthew 13 describes to us, we have wheat and tares growing up together. Christendom includes, and we use that word like people would say, "Oh, I'm a Christian." By that they mean, I'm not Muslim, I'm not Buddhist, my background is Christian. Now, they may not be born again, they may not be saved, but they would say, I have a Christian background, or my parents went to a Christian church, or today we see the rise of humanism, which they wouldn't be called Christendom. So the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, the Lutherans, the Presbyterian, the Baptist, Methodist, even cults, all those have their roots in Christianity of some sort. And that is what he's referring to, how those professing Christianity will grow up together. And I'm not so sure, but what maybe even Islam is not included, because they have certain parts of the Bible that they include. But we do see there's going to be this growth, and he's dealing with what happens with false and true that comes together, and then the shock when that day comes that he comes back. Those parables then explain that to us. The last part, chapter 25, verse 31, that deals with the Gentiles. And we'll start in verse 31. Matthew 25, 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, and as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hunger, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hunger, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick and in prison, and you visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hunger, or a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. We have now a full spectrum of the period of time that as the Jews are looking forward, when is this kingdom? And he goes on to even answer beyond what they asked. But he's saying, here's what's going to happen to the Jews. There's going to be signs. There's going to be fulfillment of all the nations will rise against Israel. That is something that's going to happen. We call the Great Tribulation. We have more revelation that we can read, and that was given in the revelation of Jesus Christ to John the Apostle. We have all these things that will happen to the Jews. There's going to be turmoil. There's going to be an Antichrist that rises up. He'll deceive many. They're going to have a truce with the Jewish people for a period of time. Halfway through that tribulation, that ends. But up until that point, till his second coming, we have the church age. So he has left, and he has challenged us to be an example, to do something for him, to be a witness. As we think about his coming, there are three parables that were given. We know the parable of the wise and the foolish virgins, and we talked about that. Some were prepared, some weren't. And when the bridegroom came, and they didn't even perceive, I don't think, this bridegroom, that was not language they understood, but we understand that because of the church, that we are the bride of Christ, and there will be the marriage supper of the Lamb. We look forward to that day of the rapture of the church to be caught up together with one another, and the dead in Christ shall rise first, and someday there'll be that grand reunion in heaven. And it would seem that initiates this final tribulation period. But the time of the Gentiles, this time of the church age, this time of Christendom, true and false, growing up together in the guise of Christendom, it is going to come to a head, and there will be the rapture of the church that sort of climaxes this whole thing. Then is ushered in a period of time where we see tribulation like it's never been seen. Signs in the sky, pestilences, and wars and rumors of wars, and all these terrible things are going to happen during the tribulation period. But the church is gone. The idea of leaving someone in charge and then coming back and seeing what did you do with the talent that I gave you, as an example, we all have a responsibility. We all are to do something with our testimony, with our Christian life. We're not just here to exist and live. We're here to be a witness. We're here to influence others. We're here to take a stand, to honor God, that people will see Christ in us. That's the responsibility which we have right now. There were the wise and the evil servants, the wise and the foolish virgins. Then there's the profitable and the unprofitable servants. In chapter 25, starting in verse 14, it says, "The kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into far country who called his own servants and delivered unto him his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, and to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey." Without reading all of it, you've probably read this before, if you've been saved any length of time, he gives people according to their ability. And he rewarded them according to what they did with the ability God gave them. And different people were able to handle different things. But the one who had the least was the least faithful. Here on this earth, in the time in which we live, that's one of the things that should concern all of us. What have I done with what God's given me? What have I done with the opportunities that I have? What am I doing for the cause of Christ? There may be some that have tremendous responsibility, may have an exposure to many things in the world that is going to make them very accountable. And there may be some that have very little. But according to our ability, God knows what we can handle, what we can do, and we have to accept that opportunity and that responsibility. What has he given you to do? What has he given me to do? And then we have to follow through with it. Here's my responsibility. I'm going to fulfill it. I'm going to do something with it. Whatever our gifts are, whatever our talents are, whatever our opportunities may be, we want to take advantage of it. It seems like so often people want to do as little as possible. They want to get by with as small amount as they possibly can. And that's one of the problems when you stand before God. How would you stand before him? And he says, now, what did you do with the opportunities I gave you? What did you do with the talent that I gave you? What did you do with the money that I gave you? And you say, well, it's safe. It's right here. I didn't lose it. I still have it. We all have to ask the question, have we invested ourselves with those opportunities? Have we used it to reach others? Have we been a faithful witness? Have we handed out tracts? Have we talked to our neighbors? Have we prayed for people? Have we been involved in our church and wanted to be a part of what's going on? Literally, there are a lot of people that as soon as they see there's work to do, they run and hide. I think some people spend enough time getting out of work that it might be easier if they just did the job. One man said, he said, I have an employee that he only comes in 4 days a week. And he always misses every Friday. And so the boss went to him and talked to him. He said, you know, I'm just curious, why is it that you come in 4 days a week? And he said, well, I can't get by on 3. That's why I come in 4. He was hoping to do less, not more. And some people are like that. They want to do less, not more. But I'm thankful that there are preachers, that there are missionaries, that there are godly Christian people that commit their life to the Lord, and they're always looking for an opportunity to serve. They're always looking for an opportunity to do something for the cause of Christ. The responsibility we have, this is addressing us, you and me. These are the issues that maybe they didn't ask the question about, but Jesus responded because he wants us to know we have a responsibility. What will we do with what we have? Some people have great opportunities. Did you ever hear somebody, they sang and they had just a great voice, but they never sang for the Lord? Where they had great talent as a musician to play an instrument or a piano, but they never played in church, they never accompanied groups, they had the talent but never used it. Or someone has a great personality. Do you ever think of someone about, boy, if they ever got saved, think how many people they could influence. But they don't because they're not saved. Right. And I see people, they have great ability and great personality, but they don't use it for the cause of Christ. They're still worldly minded. That's what he's dealing with. That's what Jesus is saying to his disciples. There will be a time when that Lord comes back and we'll give an account of what we did for the cause of Christ. He is coming for his church, and he's coming ultimately for the judgment of the Gentiles. What will be the sign of the end of the age? It's Matthew 24. The sign of his coming, verses 29 through 44. But Christendom, the evil and the wise servants, the wise foolish virgins, the profitable and unprofitable servants, all of those are parables to talk about the abilities and responsibilities that we have. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says, moreover, it's required in stewards that a man be found, what's the word?
Faithful.
Faithful. Just think about that for a second. When you go to work, most of you are still working, a few are retired, but you did work, have a job. Did you ever give somebody a responsibility or ask somebody to do something and you really wondered if they'd ever do it? That ever happened to you? If somebody did what I asked them to do and I just asked them one time and they accomplished it, I'd be surprised. Now, we have a great staff, and the truth is, I can tell people something and I can count on being done. But I know it's not like that out in the world. You got to follow up. You've got to inspect what you expect. You've got to check on them. Did you do it? Well, I'm going to get to it. Several years ago, there was something that happened when we built this building. There was a stain, and there was a member of the church who was a very faithful member and loved the Lord. But he said, don't you worry, I'll take care of that. Well, that stain was there for a long time. Months went by, and I just said something, not to nag, but I said, have you thought about that stain? Oh, yeah, don't you worry, I'm going to take care of that. It went on for many years. It never got done. It never got done. There was a guy that had a sawmill here in town that had nothing to do with Christianity. But to illustrate the point, it was sort of a half-baked thing. And he had the sawmill, and he could do work on it. And a friend that I'd been working with and visiting and witnessing to, he was telling me this story. He was a shop teacher in Wilkett, and he came to the guy, and he said, now, look, I need some boards cut, and I'd like for you to cut those boards. I don't have to have them today, and I don't have to have them tomorrow, but I'd like to get them done. Actually, years went by. 4 or 5 years later, he saw that man. And as soon as he saw him, without even asking a question, he said, I haven't forgotten about those boards. I'm going to get to it. As a Christian, if we're putting off what we ought to be doing, and years go by, shame on us. Whatever thy hand fight to do, do it with thy might. Do it heartily as unto the Lord. Let's take advantage of every opportunity that we have. The first two were faithful. They took the talents, they invested it, they were rewarded. But the one who had the smallest responsibility accomplished nothing. Matthew 25:29 says, to whom much is given, much shall be required. We just have to take what God's given us and use it for his glory. In verses 31 through 36 of chapter 25, it talks about the Gentile nations and the judgment that is coming. There are three groups that are mentioned. There's the brethren, which are the Jews. The sheep are those that are saved during the tribulation period. And the goats, who persecuted the Jews during that tribulation hour. There is coming a judgment on the Gentile nations. That is a reference of verses 31 through 46. And then you have, after the tribulation, verses 29 through 31. These are disturbances in heaven. Joel chapter 3 talks about that. There's a sign of his coming that will appear. I don't know what that sign will be. It doesn't say. Maybe it could be the Shekinah glory. Maybe it'll be his presence. Maybe it'll be him is the sign. I don't know. But there will be a sign that will be recognized and people will know. Keep in mind, the wise men came to where Jesus was, but you know what they saw? A sign in the east. They somehow recognized it. No, we have no record of what it was. They followed the star that brought them to where Jesus was. But there will be a sign and they will know, here is the Son of God. After the tribulation, here's what's going to happen. There will be people alive. There will be many that are saved. Many get saved from the two prophets that come back to life from the 144,000 Jewish single men that go out and preach. And all those people that get saved, some will be martyred, but some will be alive. When the Lord comes back, there will be those that are alive, but they're lost. They will be taken away in a judgment. There will be peace on the earth and the separation of the sheep and the goats, and he will then sit on that throne of David. That's what the Jews have been looking for. That's what they want. That's what they wanted when Jesus came. They want someone to continue to sit on that throne, to be king of the Jews, to bring peace and prosperity to their country. Someday, King Jesus will come back. And he'll come at the rapture, but he'll come for the Jews at the end of the tribulation. And he'll come with the saints to the earth to bring peace. And it will finally be peace. It's called the millennial kingdom. 1,000 years that he will rule and reign. There are three exhortations given to Israel as you go through the two chapters. The fig tree was a symbol that this generation, when these things happen, it's just like the fig tree starts to bud. No, that generation won't pass away. Maybe the Jews thought it would happen in their lifetime. But there would be an ingathering of Israel coming back to the country. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing it now. Yes. We don't know when he's coming back. The rapture, it's imminent. Could be any moment, could be any time. But when all those things that the tribulation talks about appear, that you know it's near, it's at the doorstep. But the stage is being set now. I find it hard to believe that we're going to revert backwards and it's going to be 100 years or 1,000 years before the Lord comes back, because the stage is set. Everything is in place. All the nations are coming together. We now have globalism. When I was a child, there was no such term. We have something called globalism. Everybody's connected to the entire world. Everybody has in their hand the ability to see something instantaneously, see the same thing all at once. Everybody has the ability to connect worldwide so that if in a state of emergency, one leader could emerge, and if they would follow the instructions of the bureaucrats in the health department, don't you think they'll follow the instruction of an antichrist that's smooth-talking, that has the answer? The world is ready. The world is ready. Now, if you're a young person here tonight, you might think, well, I'm never going to get married. The Lord's coming back, and I won't have a family. All I can say is, I thought it was going to happen when I first heard a prophetic message. I thought it was going to happen long ago. The matter of, is it 10 years? Is it 2 years? Is it tonight, tomorrow? Is it 50 years from now? All I'm saying is the stage is being set. I don't think it's going backwards. It's imminent that he'll cometh for his church. And as soon as that happens, the tribulation begins. This we know. Once that happens, if someone's not saved, they're in the tribulation. People will get saved, but they're going to face tribulation. You can't buy or sell. How in the world would they do that? Well, they give you the mark of the beast. You can't buy or sell anything without the mark of the beast, which is 666. I don't know how that'll be instituted. It says in your forehand or your forehead, or somehow they implement a chip or a number or a tattoo, or I don't know exactly how it happens. But this we know. They put roadblocks from one state to another to stop every piece of traffic. They put signs up, only two things of meat. We know in the grocery stores, for whatever reason, I can't imagine, whatever reason, everybody took all the toilet paper. I don't associate that together, but could you imagine that there could be a rationing of everything, that unless you fall in line, it's a national emergency, you do what I say. Boy, Communist China was far different than what we are in America. They literally stood outside the street and people's homes, and you could not go out. And if you did, they checked what time you left, when you come back, And they can throw you in jail.
That's right.
And throughout our country, they're putting people in jail because they're trying to run their business. It's incredible. All I'm saying is, this is revealing that the stage is set.
Right.
And if I weren't saved today, to me, I would be fearful. I would think, what's this world coming to? What does all of this mean? But as a Christian, I'm just comforted. It just verifies the Word of God.
Right.
It tells me He is in control. And someday, I know I'm ready, if He comes back, those who are saved will be caught up together with them. And we'll not go through the tribulation, not halfway through and not all the way through. We're gone before the tribulation. It's called pre-tribulation rapture. And we can look forward to that day. As one man stated, we don't know when he's coming back. Therefore, my bags are all packed, but my tool chest is open. I want to keep working, keep serving, keep doing what I do. But if he comes back, I'm ready.
Amen.
We need to be ready. Let's bow for prayer.